Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
My story isn't the story of a typical senator. Then again, typical isn't what we need right now.
Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton announces her bid for U.S. Senate, kicking off what's expected to be a hotly contested race. What to know about the Chicago Police Department's new policy proposal for traffic stops. And the Trump administration is pausing millions of dollars in funding for university research. A look at the potential impact. And now to some of today's top stories. The gunman in the Highland Park parade shooting is sentenced to 7 consecutive life terms in prison. 24-year-old Robert Cremo III was sentenced today at Lake County Courthouse after pleading guilty to first-degree murder and attempted murder charges. 7 people were killed and 48 others were injured in the July 4th parade shooting in 2022. Cremo did not attend today's sentencing and declined to make any statement to the court. For more on what survivors told the court at sentencing, you can visit our website. A federal judge in California is blocking the Trump administration from pulling funding from 16 sanctuary cities and counties. The order blocks the enforcement of President Donald Trump's executive order designed to strip self-proclaimed sanctuary cities of all federal funding. The injunction does not apply, though, to Chicago or Cook County, but likely bolsters efforts by local officials to prevent the administration from blowing a $3 billion hole in the city's budget. San Francisco officials filed the lawsuit, arguing the administration was unlawfully trying to force local officials to aid federal immigration agents in deportation efforts. One day after announcing he would not be seeking re-election, Senator Dick Durbin returned to his family home in Springfield to explain his decision.
I love this job. I think it's a terrific job. But I also know reality. There comes a point in your career when the torch must be passed, and I've reached that point. Now, by way of warning, I want to tell you, it's a long goodbye. I will be serving in the Senate for a year and a half more until January of 2027.
Durbin says he's not planning on endorsing any particular candidate to succeed him, but didn't rule out the possibility in a, quote, extreme case. At today's news conference, he also spoke of his fondness for Chicago.
I was born and raised in East St. Louis. We raised our kids in Springfield, but I love Chicago. And the people who want to badmouth that town are in for a fight with me. It's a
great city. And we'll hear from Juliana Stratton, who has announced her bid to replace Durbin, coming up in the program. And commuters, you may have to change your route for a while. The State Street Bridge downtown will be closed to all vehicle and foot traffic for repairs starting Monday. The Chicago Department of Transportation says the work involves replacing floor beams and improving the bridge's alignment, among other fixes. CDOT also plans to repair the viaduct just north of the bridge. Construction is expected to last through mid-November. Still to come, the Chicago Police Department releases its new policy on traffic stops, as advocates say the stops have been used to target Black and Latino residents. But first, we're one-on-one with Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton as she launches her bid for U.S. Senate.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And the race is officially on. Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton is launching her bid to become the next senator from Illinois. It comes less than 24 hours after longtime Senator Dick Durbin announced his retirement. Stratton becomes the first Democrat to officially announce her candidacy in the race, which is expected to be hotly contested. We sat down with Stratton this afternoon to talk about her announcement, her priorities, and why she thinks she's the right choice for voters. How important was it for you to be first out the gate on this?
Well, what was important is that there's a sense of urgency right now. We're looking at the chaos that's coming out of Washington, D.C. It's impacting middle-class families across our state every single day. People are anxious. They are angry. They are worried about their future and the future of their children. And so it was important to let them know that there's somebody who is going to stand in the gap, who's going to stand up and fight for them, who's going to stand up against the chaos that's coming out of Washington, D.C., and make sure that we deliver for the people of Illinois. And that's exactly what I intend to do.
Why this seat? How is it different? How is it better for you to serve Illinoisans through the Senate versus your current position as Lieutenant Governor?
Well, first of all, let me just say that I love being the Lieutenant Governor, and I love serving alongside Governor J.B. Pritzker, and I'm really proud of what we've been able to accomplish over these last 6.5 years. I mean, we've balanced the budget 6 consecutive years in a row on to our 7th soon. We have protected a woman's right to choose. We have raised the minimum wage, created jobs. Those are all ways that we have delivered for people. That's what government really should do. It should do some good. It should make your life better. And that's what people are looking for. And I think right now in Washington, D.C., what people see is sort of the same old playbook that's been used. And they're really looking for new energy, new leadership, new voices. And that's what I intend to bring and continue the fight and continue delivering for the people of our state.
There are likely to be very many people, very many Democrats running for this seat. The Republicans, of course, have said that they plan on trying to get it back as well. What are some of the issues that you think will drive this election, and what are your priorities?
Well, I think first and foremost, what's going to drive this election is recognizing that right now we have chaos coming out of our federal government and the White House right now due to Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and the congressional Republicans who are not standing up for the people of Illinois or the people across our country. I mean, look at what's happening there. They are cutting access to health care, cutting Medicaid. They are threatening to cut Social Security. They are, in so many ways, turning us backwards. After they said that they would cut prices on day one, we're seeing these trade wars that Donald Trump started that are actually raising prices. And so I think this is an opportunity to, when we think about what's necessary, first and foremost, we have to stand up and stand in the gap and stop the damage that's being done by Donald Trump. And that's why we need a fighter. And then once we can do that, then we can focus on all the issues that people are concerned about, making sure that we do exactly what we've done here in Illinois, making sure that people have expanded access to health care, that they can take care of their families, that they have, that can send their children to school and know that they'll get a full education, including the history that's been so important to our communities. This is an opportunity to really just show the contrast between what's happening in D.C. and what's happening here in Illinois, and to say that I want to be someone that not only continues to deliver for the people of Illinois, but also am not afraid to stand up to Donald Trump.
Just looking ahead to this race, right, there's going to be a pretty deep primary, likely. How do you plan on fundraising and sticking through the race?
Well, I'm going to roll up my sleeves day one today and get to work. I mean, I'm going to try to meet as many Illinoisans as I can. I'm going to talk to them about their issues, and I'm going to let them know that I'm going to fight for them. And I'm not going to leave any stone, overturned. I'm going to make sure I try to get to everybody that I can. But I also, you know, this is an opportunity. I mean, think about today, day one, I got a great commitment from the Democratic Lieutenant Governors Association, a 7-figure commitment to my campaign. That is a boost, and there's been an outpouring of support from so many people who are just ready for new leadership. And so I'm going to carry that on and make sure that I do what I do, which is go all across the state. I've done that as Lieutenant Governor. I've always been someone who believes that every voice matters, that I try to listen to the wisdom in the room, and I'm going to keep doing that because in every community, there are issues that really unite us, and it's going to require that unity to stand up against Donald Trump.
If elected, you would only be the 5th Black woman elected to serve in the U.S. Senate. One of those previous 4 is, of course, from Illinois as well. But what does it say to you that there haven't been more? And what do you think of that? What do you make of that?
Well, one of the things that it says to me is that we need to change that. I mean, we need to make sure that in all of the halls of power, whether it's in Springfield or in our nation's capital, that our voices are represented in all of these spaces, and so that we can continue to bring our authentic selves and our perspectives and our backgrounds into those spaces and be strong advocates. I mean, I think that's the beauty of America, that we have so much diversity, and that diversity is under attack right now. And so we need to make sure that as policies are being created, that our voices are at the table. But I also just think about, you know, I'm the mom of 4 daughters, and I think about the my daughters and so many other young girls who deserve to see people who look like them and who can look at them and people like me and dream about what's possible for themselves. So it's an exciting time, and I look forward to running this campaign and hopefully serving in the U.S. Senate.
You're setting off on a listening tour after this. Obviously, you've got a busy schedule ahead, I'm sure. How will you plan on, or how do you plan on balancing the campaign with your current duties as Lieutenant Governor?
Well, the work of the Lieutenant Governor is going to continue. I mean, I have a fantastic staff and a fantastic team, and I'm still going to be carrying out responsibilities as Lieutenant Governor. But I'm also going to have to make sure that I hit the campaign trail running as well, and make sure that I, like I said, rolling up my sleeves. So I will find a way to balance it, and everybody, that all the great people that I have working with me are going to make sure that I continue to do what I need to do for the people of Illinois in whichever capacity it turns up.
All right. Lieutenant Governor Stratton, best of luck. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Other Democrats considering entering the race include Representatives Lauren Underwood, Raja Krishnamoorthy, and Robin Kelly, as well as Treasurer Michael Frerichs, Secretary of State Alexi Giannoulias, and State Senator Robert Peters. Republican Congressman Darren LaHood is also considering his party's nomination. The Chicago Police Department is today unveiling its new proposal for traffic stops. The policy would continue to allow police officers to pull over drivers for minor violations in order to find evidence of other unrelated crimes. Our Heather Sharon joins us now with more. Heather, this proposed policy, this represents the first time CPD officials have acknowledged that officers are empowered to stop drivers in Chicago on a pretext in order to search for evidence of a crime. So first, what are pretextual stops and why are they so controversial?
Well, Chicago police made nearly 300,000 traffic stops last year that they reported to state officials. Nearly 65% of those were based on officers' observation of a broken headlight or a broken taillight or expired license and registration stickers on your license plate. Police reform advocates say those kinds of stops do not make the city any safer and, in fact, disproportionately target Black and Latino drivers. And they said that those kind of stops should be banned. Today, the Chicago Police Department said, no, those stops are an effective crime-fighting tool. And as long as officers balance the need for fairness with that sort of investigatory need, they are appropriate to continue to be used.
So this policy, it's not yet final. This is a proposal. And the city's Police Oversight Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability, though, they're objecting to some key parts of it. Take us through those areas of disagreement.
Well, they think pretextual stops should be banned in most cases, which sets up a clear conflict that will have to be resolved before this policy is finalized. They also want stricter restrictions on when officers can search cars or trucks, even with the permissions of drivers. Those would be big changes to the current proposal.
All right, I'll be curious to see how that plays out. Heather, what's next? Who has the final say?
Well, it's complicated. The commission has the power to set policy for the police department, but 10 months ago, CPD agreed to allow traffic stops to be covered by the consent decree, which means this policy must pass muster with the monitoring team overseeing those reforms, the Illinois Attorney General's office, and it will be the federal judge overseeing this reform push that will have the final say in resolving any sort of impasse.
Not uncomplicated at all. Okay, Heather Sharon, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Professors and researchers at Chicago area universities say federal funding cuts are leaving research projects unfinished. The Trump administration is freezing $790 million for Northwestern University, putting over 100 projects on pause. Research funding from the CDC and National Institutes of Health are also at risk. Joining us to discuss the local impact are Danielle Tolman-Ursik, an engineering professor at Northwestern University, Linda Forrest, a doctor and health professor at the University of Illinois Chicago, and Julius Lux, an engineering professor at Northwestern University. Thanks to the three of you for joining us. So all three of you have had your research either, or projects in limbo or to stop altogether because of these funding cuts. First, Danielle, over to you. Tell us more about what these stop work orders mean.
So for us, it means that we had to pause a couple of weeks ago some of the projects in our lab towards developing dynamic camouflage, to developing some water tests, which Julius will talk about as well, we're collaborators, and to stopping some of our work towards developing wearable electronics for the future. And so it meant, you know, moving the students on those projects to other projects very abruptly, and helping them try to still finish their dissertation research. So,
and I imagine
pretty devastating and sudden.
Yes, I imagine getting up to speed on a new project, and I'm sure all of that took some time. Julius Lux, what is the local impact of university research? What does it mean when that research stops?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's really important for the public to understand. When they see $790 million to Northwestern cut, it's like, what does that mean? What it means is that individual research projects have to stop, like Danielle said. In our case, we were developing a test for clean water, something that somebody could use in their own home to figure out if their water was contaminated with lead. Now, when that work stops, that means we can't continue to develop that technology, and people are going to not know if their water is safe to drink.
They won't have that opportunity to use that test
to
find out. Dr. Forrest, your grant from the CDC could be put on pause. It sounds like there's some uncertainty there. What about your grad students and your staff in the labs when something like that happens? What is the impact?
Yeah, I just want to point out that this is the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health that lives in the CDC. 80% of that workforce was RIFT, as they like to say.
And reduction enforced.
Right. And my unit at UIC School of Public Health is Environmental and Occupational Health Sciences. So all the work that we have, $24 million in grants from NIOSH, and what we do is protect the nation's workforce. So we do research. It's very applied public health research. We evaluate injuries and illnesses that workers experience. We do the public health surveillance, counting the injuries and illnesses in the state of Illinois for the state of Illinois. And so stopping this is really harming the workforce. Our research is very applied to protecting the workforce, which is a precious resource in the state.
So it's harmful for all of us who have jobs, right?
Exactly.
Like the workforce itself. I imagine then for the folks who work in your lab, and the grad students who are learning in your lab, what are they dealing with right now with this uncertainty for them?
Yeah, right. Well, some of them are trying to graduate. I have 10 students in a Center for Agricultural Safety and Health that I support. If this funding goes away, they no longer get supported. They maybe can't finish their degrees. They can't be in the field doing the research that they need to do to complete their degrees. Many of them are in the middle. My colleagues are working in a training program, so they have dozens of students who are training in medicine, occupational medicine, work-related health problems, in nursing, in industrial hygiene, in occupational safety. All of those careers are dependent, completely dependent on NIOSH. NIOSH is the only funder of that kind of research. And so all the practitioners that are keeping workers safe in workplace, the next gen, the pipeline to people that will be able to continue to do that work is being
stopped.
Sounds like
you're saying it's being held up, absolutely.
Yes.
Danielle, this research, it can also be very expensive. Yes. Give us a sense of, you know, what expenses the federal funds cover for you all.
So the major expenses are, one, to cover the time of the researchers in the lab, and that is a huge expense. It is their jobs. And the second major expense is all of the equipment that we use requires expensive reagents and materials and supplies to run these experiments. And And that's also gone. And so even if we are finding a way to keep those people on new projects, it's not towards what we intended, and we no longer have the materials and supplies to do it. So we have to be very creative about where their projects might go, that they can do something not at the bench and computational in nature, and it will not be the same.
Northwestern has said in a statement, quote, "The university, after consultation with the Board of Trustees, will fund research that is subject to stop work orders or the federal funding freeze. This support is intended to keep these projects going until we have a better understanding of the funding landscape." Julius, we know that Northwestern has a massive endowment. Doesn't necessarily always mean that that money can just fill the gap. But do you think the university's resources can make up for the federal grants being lost in the long term?
Yeah, and it's a great question for people to understand. In the end, the answer is no. The U.S. government has, for about 80 years, has been pumping in money to universities as the engine of innovation in this country. The system is built around that. The government gives universities money. The best and the brightest come up with the ideas, and the ones that bubble to the top make it out into the marketplace in our businesses. Northwestern is going to, you know, I can't speak on behalf of the university, but I know that they're going to work hard to keep us scientists going. But there's only so much it can do. This is going to cause real impacts to us and across the nation.
And if the system is built around university research and the government is therefore funding it, is there another sector that could pick up that research, private sector, nonprofit?
A lot of people, you're hearing this, you know, people chattering, well, maybe research should be done at companies. And certainly our companies in this country are wonderful. But the companies can't take over the role of the university, and there's a lot of great reasons for that. Companies have shorter timelines. They can't invest on those literally moonshot ideas that universities have traditionally done. And also people, you know, wonder, okay, if the companies are doing this research, who are the researchers in the companies that do that? Well, every researcher in a company comes from a university. So we have a research mission, but we also have a training mission. Our students are not only doing the research, they're learning how to do the research and to be leaders. And without universities, you lose all of that.
Dr. Force, if you do lose this funding, for example, what could happen? I'm sure you hate to think about it.
It's breathtaking, honestly. We support, just from NIOSH funding, we support probably 35 students in graduate programs. If that funding goes away, really we don't have students in our programs. We lose the pipeline, number one. Number two, we lose the research projects that they're working on. You can't train students to do research by talking to them in a classroom. You have to get them out into the field. They have to be working in laboratories. They have to be collecting and analyzing data. They have to be learning how to write reports and so on, how to translate their research, communicate with communities and so on. If we don't have this funding, we lose all of that expertise, and all of those students lose their university opportunity.
Julius, we know that universities, many of the especially elite ones, are facing several challenges. Civil rights investigations, obviously national pushback regarding the protests last year. What do you make of all of this federal scrutiny of higher education?
The thing I think I want to speak to most about that is these research cuts. There's a lot going on, and the public, I think, doesn't really completely understand all of the different angles, and universities have somehow lost their luster in the public imagination. But I think it's really important to realize that all these things that are happening, these direct cuts are coming to individuals and research projects. All of the people that are at universities doing research are doing it for other people. All of us at this table spend our days and nights thinking about how can we help others. The students have come in dedicating essentially their lives to helping others. And having all these funding cuts are really impacting not only things now, but well into our future.
Danielle, what could be next for your team at Northwestern?
For right now, we're looking for those stopgap solutions. It won't be enough, to Julius's earlier point, to replace all of that funding, that infrastructure. But we're hoping that others do rise up and say, hey, this work is important, and here's some money to keep it going so that we have, the next computer in 20 years, the next AI revolution, whatever it might be. It starts now, and so we really hope that there will be other sources out there in the interim, or that people rise up and say, hey, we do want our universities doing this research. We understand there may be other problems there, but let's keep that research funding going in the meantime, because it's too important to let that go.
Okay. Best of luck to all of you. Thanks to you for joining us. Danielle Tolman-Ursik, Dr. Linda Forrest, and Julius Lux. Thanks to all of you.
Appreciate it.
And that is our show for this Thursday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. And have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.